From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
TGIF, beautiful people, welcome to another fantastic edition of Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. So glad you've allowed us to close out your week. So much to get to, so little time. On today's show, we'll talk about Michigan State and Oregon. I mean, who isn't talking about it? It is the big game, a game that can really reveal a lot about the Spartan program, folks. We'll dive into it and give you a breakdown of that one. We'll also talk about the ending of a rivalry. U of M and Notre Dame, yes, they put things to bed tomorrow as well. We'll also talk a little Tigers, kind of break down that whole Seahawks and Packers game last night as the NFL has now officially started, and also bring you our NFL pick'ems. And also in just a moment, we'll be chatting with the play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts, Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, as he puts a bow on the season of the Lugnuts and also gives us a preview of some high school football action tonight. All of that and so much more. But hey, here's Alex Sharg with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
Good afternoon and happy Friday. Finally, I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Friday, September 5th. On Monday, Michigan State extended several offers to prospects for the next two recruiting classes. One of those scholarships went to 6'5", 200-pound wide receiver Lawrence Cager of Calvert Hall High School in Maryland. The Spartans would still like to add another wide receiver to the 2015 class, and they are focused on a select few prospects. Cager has moved up the MSU recruiting board, and on Monday he received news that the scholarship from Mark D'Antonio came through. Cager is rated a three-star recruit and the number 44 wide receiver in the nation for the class of 2015. Cager has scholarships on the table from other power programs like Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Wisconsin. He has more than 40 scholarships to choose from. Three Eastern Michigan University football players have been charged with assaulting the cousin of a man convicted of killing their teammate, Demarius Reed. The Ann Arbor News says court records show that Darius Scott, Quincy Jones, and Jerakis Jones are charged with aggravated assault. The charges involve Friday's attack on 24-year-old DeMarco Taylor. The players have a pretrial hearing on Monday. Eastern Michigan Assistant Athletic Director Greg Steiner says they remain on the team during disciplinary proceedings. The Detroit Tigers started out strong Thursday night. Nine innings later, they finished even stronger. After fouring score times in the first innings, the Tigers' offense went into a slumber until the 11th, when it broke through for seven runs, an 11-4 win over the Cleveland Indians. Detroit, which holds the American League's second wildcard spot, won 3 of 4 in the crucial series to pull one game behind Kansas City in the AL Central. Detroit returns home today to begin a three-game interleague series against San Francisco, the first time the teams have met since the Giants swept the 2012 World Series. Rick Porcello starts for Detroit against Jake Peavy. Marshawn Lynch from the Seahawks ran for 110 yards and 2 touchdowns. Percy Harvin had 100 combined yards rushing and receiving, and the Seahawks dominated Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers in a 36-16 victory to kick off their NFL regular season Thursday night. Russell Wilson finished 19 of 28 for 191 yards and 2 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers went 23 of 33 for 189 yards and 1 touchdown. Seattle had 207 yards rushing as a team and won for the 18th time in the past 20 regular season home games. Chantel Jackson, a former fiancé of boxer Floyd Mayweather, is suing Floyd for multiple assaults in an 18-month span from 2012 to 2014, including one threat at gunpoint. The charges include assault, battery, civil harassment, defamation, and false imprisonment. More fights between Jackson and Mayweather occurred right before Floyd's May 3rd win over Marcus Maidana, which was a fight close enough to be a rematch. Floyd will fight Maidana again with Jackson on his mind next Saturday, September 13th. In the U.S. Open quarterfinals, tennis stud Roger Federer avoided a big upset yesterday. Federer saved 2 match points and came back from a 2-set deficit to edge 20th-seeded Gael Monfils in 5 sets on Thursday night. The 17-time major champion reaches the semifinals at Flushing Meadows for the first time since 2011. Florida State has launched a disciplinary inquiry into allegations that Seminoles quarterback Jameis Winston sexually assaulted a female student in 2012. The attorney, John Clune, said representatives from the university interviewed the woman in early August for the first time since she reported the alleged assault in December of 2012. Prosecutors declined to charge Winston last December, citing a lack of evidence. And lastly, former Buffalo Bills quarterback Jim Kelly was declared cancer-free Thursday after follow-up biopsies came back negative. Initial tests last month, conducted several weeks after Kelly completed chemotherapy and radiation in the spring, returned no evidence of cancer in his jaw. Doctors, however, required biopsies in other areas of Kelly's jaw, but it's good news at the end of the day for Kelly. And those are your current Sports Quick Hit headliners for this Friday, September 5th. Time to send it back to Al to start the show with all of the news regarding MSU football. Lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex. And how about Jim Kelly? Man, that's a great story. No signs of cancer right now. My goodness. What an incredible story. I remember seeing the whole account of what he was going through and how Jim was just battling cancer on a daily basis. It was really taking a toll on him. He had lost so much weight. But now some great news. I mean, he's throughout that piece, what really stood out was just how positive Jim stayed and his family around him. Oh, man, that's fantastic news. Again, no evidence of cancer in his jaw. How about that? I love hearing stories like that. Congratulations, Jim. All right, folks. Well, keeping this train moving, we have a fantastic show in store for you. As Alex just said, our phone lines are open as we speak. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We're asking you all to call in on today's show. Give us your thoughts and predictions on what you think is going to go down in Eugene, Oregon tomorrow evening, okay? Big matchup, number 6 Michigan State taking on number 4 Oregon. Oh, boy, two powerhouses. Michigan State really an opportunity to show and to prove to everybody that they belong in the category of the big dogs, okay? They belong, in that same sentence, okay? Really a statement game. Give your thoughts on it. Call in today, 517-355-9527. We're also going to dive into, of course, Michigan and Notre Dame as they now in their rivalry with a culmination game tomorrow of this historic series, a really storied series between those two schools. We'll chat about that. And also during our second segment here on the show, we'll be chatting with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler as he will also give his thoughts and predictions on MSU and Oregon, sort of break down and put a bow on the season for the Lansing Lugnuts as their postseason hopes kind of went out the window not too long ago. And also he'll be broadcasting one of the big high school area football matches tonight. He'll kind of give us a preview of Owosso and Portland as they will be broadcasting on 92.1 Big Country FM. So we'll have all of that. And we'll also give you our NFL pick'ems, our very first NFL pick'em of the season. Of course, the season officially starting last night with that Seattle Seahawks just trounce on the Green Bay Packers. Boy, the Seahawks look good. I tell you that. They looked like a well-oiled machine. Looked like they haven't missed a beat since last year's Super Bowl campaign. So we'll talk about that and, again, give you our NFL pick'ems and so much more. Again, folks, the number to call is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Alex, I tell you what, man, on yesterday's show, I kind of put my streak for Cash Destiny in your hands with that, the USA soccer match, I believe it was. And I tell you what, you were right on, my man. You want to shy away from it. My win streak is at win 7 right now as we speak. I've won 7 in a row. I don't want to jinx myself, but it's going pretty well right now for me.
Way to go, man. Maybe I'm your lucky charm. I'll have to keep giving you more predictions.
Definitely. Well, and when it gets to this point, the mistake I make is, I get too high and mighty and a little too happy and antsy and start to say, okay, I'm at 7 now. Well, let me make another pick to get it to 8. I looked at, the rundown for today. I'm not making any picks today because I'm not comfortable with any of them. So I'm taking the smart route.
As you always say, got to get your mind right. Got to make sure you know what you're doing.
Exactly. None of the matches really intrigued me today. And, it's really cool. I don't know if you saw this, but in light, of course, of college football being back and on Sunday with all of the NFL games that will be taking place on Sunday, I will be glued to my couch and my television all weekend. But, in light of that, Streak for Cash has something pretty cool going on where the winners, they're going to have a plethora of all the games just about on Streak for Cash for Saturday and Sunday. Saturday will be college football. Sunday, of course, NFL. And the longest win streak for that day, for those 2 days, They're going to pick a winner for those 2 days, and those winners will get $10,000. Unbelievable. So it's going to be a big weekend for that, a big weekend for sports and picks. So, and again, we'll be breaking down our picks for the NFL, and we'll also list a few college games, of course. But, you know, we got to start off today's show talking about the obvious, folks. The talk of the town here in Michigan, at least, is, of course, Michigan State and Oregon. Number 6, Michigan State will take on number 4, Oregon, in one of the more intriguing matches of the weekend in college football. It's going to be a good one, folks. Michigan State, I was looking at a few Twitter accounts yesterday from Damian Terry to Connor Cook, and everybody, you know, was hopping on the plane and taking pictures from the plane. There was a really cool picture I saw this morning of, I guess there was some crop field in Oregon that actually mowed the Spartan shield or helmet into the grass. It was really cool. They could see it from afar, and a few players took a picture of it. So it's going to be a good one, though. It's going to be a good one. We're about to break down this game and give you our thoughts and predictions on Michigan State and Oregon. And really, you know, just to start off this conversation, Alex, I tell you what. First of all, I have to preface it with this. Michigan State, and I always go back on that chip on the shoulder mentality and sort of proving themselves. Well, they're with this matchup, they're not only carrying the Michigan State banner, but they're also carrying the Big Ten banner in this matchup, because this is an opportunity to show the world, to show the nation that the Big Ten can hang with the big dogs, basically. Oregon, you know, throughout the past countless years, has been a program that brings it. I mean, they are a fast-paced offense. They put up a lot of points. Just looking at some numbers here, some key stats that really stand out to me when you think of Oregon. Looking at last year, they had an 11-2 record. They averaged around 45 points per game in 2013. 565 yards of total offense per game, an average of 565 total yards. 21 points allowed per game in last year as well. But I mean, they've put up those numbers, you know, throughout the past several years. Oregon is one of those programs that when you talk about college football, their name is floated around a lot. Michigan State is a program now with winning a Rose Bowl. It's a program, you know, where the Spartans are kind of new to that type of success, I would say, in the most recent years with being a Rose Bowl champion. They haven't been a Rose Bowl champion or even gotten that close since 1988. So Michigan State, with this matchup against Oregon, there are a lot of statements that can be made if they come out and make this one close, even if they lose. But if they make it close, that will be a premier statement that is made not only about Michigan State, but about the Big Ten. They can't get blown out here. I want to say that to start off this conversation. Now, diving into sort of the X's and O's of this matchup, Alex, if Michigan State wants to leave Eugene, Oregon with the win, Marcus Mariota has to be contained to a certain degree. And when you look at Marcus Mariota, I kind of want to compare him, or you know, so much to how Braxton Miller was, you know, when Michigan State played them in the Big Ten Championship out in Indianapolis. And you know what Michigan State, you know, first of all, the reason why I compare Mariota to Miller is because both of them play similarly. I mean, you know, Marcus Mariota is a guy who, of course, I mean, he's relatively accurate when he's sitting in the pocket. He can pick and choose. He has a lot of weapons to choose from also on that offense. But they do such a great job of reading the offense and knowing when to burn the defense with their legs. They do a great job of scrambling, Mariota and Miller, the same. And if you look at last year, to sort of compare it, to sort of give us a sample size of what to expect to a certain degree against Marcus Mariota, last year in the Big Ten Championship game when Michigan State played Ohio State facing Braxton Miller, they did a great job of containing him through the air. Only about, you know, 101 yards through the air. But this is the thing that burned Michigan State when it came to Braxton Miller. Again, using his feet. He had 142 rush yards in that Big Ten Championship game. That's far too many. And, you know, I remember you alluding to it not too long ago, Alex, how Braxton Miller was able to sort of, if there wasn't anything through the air, Miller was able to read that Michigan State defense and able to get out in the open field and create and do a lot of damage on Michigan State. I think this game has the potential to see Marcus Mariota do the same, just because they are similar in that style and fashion. I'll start it with that, Alex.
Yeah, first of all, in response to playing with the big dogs, I think a bigger statement would be made if it was an SEC team. Not to knock Oregon in any way, certainly a big dog, the 45 points a game and the huge athletic facilities and their prestige as a program, you can't knock on that. And I agree with you. I mean, this is a huge game and definitely more of a dynasty game for them. But I think that with the Pac-12 and how bad they've been, Al, the last couple years, I mean, the Pac-12 has not been good. And especially in bowl games, they have not been a dominant conference.
Yeah, but, you know, Oregon, and just the Pac-12 in general, when you talk about a team like Oregon, I mean, Oregon is a team every single year where I turn on ESPN and they're one of the premier teams in the nation.
They're premier,
you know what I mean?
But they've Without also a doubt. They've also lost to the good Big Ten teams. I mean, they had trouble when they went to Michigan back, you know, 5-6 years ago. They had trouble when they played other Big Ten teams. I mean,
the reason why this game is getting so much, I mean, because it's hard not to. I mean, right now, college game day.
Oh, I get it.
Is at this
you got a Heisman Trophy. You can argue two Heisman Trophy candidates in Mariota, and
right.
Even maybe you can argue Connor Cook is one.
This isn't. So do you agree that this is an opportunity? This is certainly an opportunity.
It's an opportunity
that Michigan State
but
can show that they deserve.
I wouldn't say it's the biggest. I would say there are bigger dogs out
there.
Well,
yeah,
than
without a
play.
Doubt. I mean, they could play in Alabama, of course, but
right.
Still. I mean, Oregon is in that same sentence without a doubt.
Right. But I don't want to overhype this game that this is the end all, the cream of the crop, the best team in the – I mean, this isn't the best
it's
team
one
in the
of.
Land.
It's one of.
It's one of the better teams in the land. I wouldn't even put Oregon in the top three.
What? You got to be kidding me. Alex, look at the rankings.
They're
a top five team. They're number three in the AP poll, number
right.
four in the coaches
poll. I know.
Poll.
I think there's a couple better teams in Oregon. But I agree. I mean, obviously a huge game. Now, what they have to do with Mariota, the first game against South Dakota State when Oregon played them, they averaged about 9.3 points per possession. Now, that is a really big number that they're going to have to consume. A lot of that led to Marcus Mariota on the ground. Some of that obviously led to the rushing game. Historically, the Ducks have great running backs that come out of their program. So what they're going to have to do is off the edge with their linebackers, and this is what a lot of analysts are talking about, between Tywan Jones and Ed Davis and those guys on the edge, they're going to have to consume that spread just like they did at Jacksonville State. I mean, if you remember the Jacksonville State game, whatever their defense is with the mic and the – I mean, they were right there every play. Whenever there was play action, they were not getting fooled, and they're going to see a lot of that. So for me, that's the biggest thing is the linebackers on the outside – containing Mariota. That's the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, well, that's one of my hits. I mean, containing Mariota is certainly, you know, if not the premier objective for Pat Narduzzi. And, you know, Pat Narduzzi, he knows that. I mean, Narduzzi is such a, you know, he's one of the best defensive coordinators in all of the land, and he had some interesting comments throughout the week in preparation for this Oregon game. And, he kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, Mariota has so much time to sit in the pocket and just sort of pick apart defenses. He doesn't want to give Marcus Mariota that time. You're going to see in this game, you're going to see a lot of blitzes. You're going to see a lot of pressure on Marcus Mariota to make something happen. And, that's going to be one of the biggest keys for me. And MSU is going to be physical. Again, they're going to be physical. They're going to blitz a lot. And MSU is going to try to not to give Mariota a lot of time in that pocket. Now, you know, again, one of the biggest keys for me looking at this game is exactly how run heavy will MSU be? Now, looking at Oregon and looking at the teams that have given Oregon trouble in the past few years, one of those teams is a fellow, of course, Pac-12 member, that being Stanford. Stanford is a team that has really, really, really just irked Oregon for many, many reasons. And if you remember, when Michigan State beat Stanford, that same team, I'm talking about Stanford, in the Rose Bowl game last year, Michigan State and Stanford were getting a lot of comparisons from one another for being sort of, you know, they play alike, a lot alike. You know, when it comes to their defense, they love to rush. They love to put pressure on the quarterback. The offense is usually run heavy, not a lot of yards through the yard. They love to pound you with the run and then bait you into the run and sort of open things for the passing game to sort of surprise you. That's how Michigan State plays, and Stanford has had a lot of success against Oregon in that regard. So, and just to put it into more perspective, if Oregon wants to win the Pac-12 this season, they're going to have to beat Michigan State not once but twice, because Stanford reminds me so much of Michigan State in so many regards. But yeah, you're going to see Michigan State be physical. And I'm really interested, though, even though Michigan State is such, you know, a run-heavy offense to a degree, I would like to see how much of a leniency and how loose that leash gets on Connor Cook to be able to work the passing game a little bit down the field. Now, if you look at it, you know, Oregon has some great corners. They have great corners that can stick with those MSU wide receivers very, very well. But the passing game for MSU showed a lot of light. You got a quarterback in Connor Cook, who arguably, you know, was the most confident man in America near the tail end of last year. Connor Cook looked, you know, and it looked the same, like he didn't even miss a beat in that Jacksonville State game. So just how much they'll allow Connor Cook to throw the ball down the field will be interesting. But again, you will see that run game be an intricate factor of that offense. You're going to see Jeremy Lanford get some touches. Hey, they may even throw Nick Hill in for a few. Delton Williams will get some playing time. Michigan State will pound the ball. And then later on, we may see them work down the air as well.
Yeah, telling it like it is, Connor Cook's effectiveness last game with those two big passes to Lipitor, those were made because the cornerbacks totally let Lipitor get downfield. The problem here with Oregon is you're not going to see any blown coverages from Oregon. You're not going to see Lippitt beat a guy by five or six steps. They're going to be right on him.
Right, I agree.
And that's why I'm glad you brought that up, because if Michigan State can be as effective against a non, you know, Division II team or a lower FBS team, you know, that's going to be important. I still do think that the X factor of the game is MSU's defense versus Oregon's offense, but I agree that we'll have to see how Connor Cook and the offense can go deep downfield and make big impact plays downfield against Oregon.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. And again, going back to that Jacksonville State game, again, this is looking at that game, you know, and I talked about how it was a dress rehearsal, you know what I mean, for Oregon. It really wasn't. Let's be honest here. You know, Jacksonville State and Oregon, they don't even deserve to be in the same sentence, if you ask me. I mean, these are two teams that, okay, yeah, Jacksonville State may run their offense to a similar degree and fashion to that of Oregon's. But at the same time, hey, that talent differential is through the roof. That speed and agility and so on and so forth is totally – there's a big differential between that and Jacksonville State. Now, with that being said, though – I think, you know, I was able to, you know, we were able to see Connor Cook do some great things. We were able to see those receivers. And you talk about Tony Lippitt, you know, getting loose down the field. I mean, yeah, Tony Lippitt definitely beat, you know, on the first touchdown, he beat the corner going down the right sideline for that touchdown. And on that second touchdown, I mean, he was just left wide open. My grandma could have made that throw for that touchdown. But against A.J. Troop, if you remember the A.J. Troop touchdown, I mean, that was just a beautiful pass right on the money. Good adjustment in the air by AJ to come down, get 2 feet down, and touchdown. I mean, those type of plays are what kind of stood out to me and said, okay, Connor Cooks, his confidence is through the roof, and he's willing to make those throws and put those throws in position for his receivers to make plays. So it's going to be interesting. That's going to be an interesting battle because, again, Oregon's corners are no slouches. I mean, they are fast. They are agile. They love to get at it, folks. Another thing that I think is going to be a pretty big factor in this game, well, that has the potential, I guess I should say that, has the potential to be a pretty big factor in this game, Alex, is when you look at the conditions of this game. I don't know if you look at the forecast, Alex, but it is predicted to be about 95 degrees, and the humidity is predicted to be through the roof. Now, Michigan State, when they learned about the forecast earlier this week, they decided to sort of mimic those conditions throughout practice. So in their indoor practice facility, what they did was pretty clever. They turned the heat all the way up. The players actually were practicing in degree temperatures that were close to 100 degrees in the practice facility. And also the noise is going to be through the roof in that stadium at that field. I believe it was Autzen?
Autzen Stadium.
Autzen Stadium out in Eugene. And, you know, it's a very loud place. It's a hostile environment. It's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. Michigan State, that could be a factor in condition. Yeah. That comes down to conditioning, mm-hmm. You know?
It's a duck swamp. And yeah. Especially, you know, we see it when it's raining. Thank goodness it really didn't rain in Jacksonville State. But especially coming off the edge again, I hate to bring it up again, but when that grass gets slippery, that's how Mariota will break up for big games. If it's really slippery grass or stuff like that. So even with the humidity, I mean, the good thing is Michigan State's doing a lot more out-of-state recruiting now, so they're getting a lot of guys from the South that are used to it, as opposed to guys that are usually from Michigan that aren't usually used to it, you know, practicing every day in 90-degree heat.
And that's the thing. I don't know too much about the climate of Oregon historically, but I don't even know if they're going to be used to it, because I don't think Oregon is usually a 95-degree day.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I assume it rains just just kind of like Seattle out there in the
yeah,
Northwest.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like to be like a humid state. It's not like Florida here or California,
right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
But so I don't even know how used to these teams, how both of these teams are going to, you know, be able to deal with these conditions. But I think it certainly will be a factor. I mean, you know, you may see some cramping up, you know, if they're not hydrated enough. That's going to be also interesting. And, you know, something that I always bring up, you know, and that I talked about when we were at Media Day, of course, on the brink, on the even heel of this year for Michigan State football, was just that chip on the shoulder mentality. That, you know, that chip on the shoulder mentality where everyone's against you, you know, you're the underdog in every matchup. Michigan State historically thrives on that. That's what this program thrives on each and every time they step out in that field. Now, this is, of course, is an odd year to sort of harp on that mentality simply because this is a team who won the Rose Bowl championship, for goodness sake. So I was curious, you know, going to media, talking with the players on just how they would shift that mentality or how they would find that chip on their shoulder. And this is a perfect example of when they can enact that mentality, Alex, because looking at it, I mean, I think Vegas, in my opinion, is straight up just disrespecting Sparty in this one. I don't know if you saw at the beginning of the week, but Vegas actually had Michigan State as a near 10 to 11 point underdog coming into this one. I'm sitting like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, this is a team who, again, proved, you know, they beat Stanford, for goodness sake, a team that, again, always gives Oregon the blues. They showed that they are, you know, the Rose Bowl champs. First time this happened since 1988. They're ranked number 6 in the nation in the preseason polls. And you're still, you know, thinking that MSU is going to get, you know, going to lose by 10 to 11 points. I think that's totally overstated. I think this is going to be a close game, at least closer than 10 to 11 points. That's almost two touchdowns.
Yeah, absolutely. And aside from that, I mean, obviously, Michigan State's defense and Oregon's defense, yeah, I mean, they're both facing very good offenses. And it's going to really be up to a lot of individual players, like Shalique Calhoun, going up against two offensive linemen on the tackle side who are up for all these kinds of awards. So, I mean, a lot of it will be making plays. And Mark D'Antonio preached that all last year. Got to make plays. So, no, I agree. It's going to be definitely a jugger match right here. And I still think that Oregon might still win, but it's going to be a lot closer than you think.
Yeah, I'm actually, if we had to make a prediction now with before we get to our guest for today's show, I don't even know if we've made predictions on this game yet, but I'm gonna go. Oh boy, if I had to choose, I'm gonna say 27-24, Oregon.
Okay, I'm gonna say 31-24, Oregon.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's gonna be and again this goes on the show. I mean, I had MSU before the season started for college football. I had MSU making to that 14 playoff again. They can't get blown out in this game. This is a game, this is a statement game for MSU to prove to everybody out there that they belong on this stage. That last year was no fluke. That Michigan State is here to stay. This program is one of the elite programs in the nation. This is the opportunity that separates the good from the great, the average programs to the above average programs. And, you know, this is a perfect example. And I think, you know, it was great. I don't know if you saw this, guys, but Tom Izzo was named as the honorary captain for Michigan State coming into the Oregon game. So Tom Izzo will be out there in Eugene, and he's actually going to give a speech to the Michigan State football team right before kickoff, so in the locker room. So it's going to be really interesting. I'm sure Tom Izzo is going to have a very empowered message. If anything, you know, Tom Izzo is a guy who knows how to you know, bring a program from good to great to superb, okay? He's won a national championship, for goodness sake. So it's going to be an interesting speech. I wish I could be a fly on the wall for that one, folks. So, okay, folks, again, we're taking your calls on this, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Call in, give us your thoughts and predictions on what you think is going to happen in Eugene, Oregon as the Spartans take on the Ducks. Don't go anywhere. We'll return in just a sec. Well, Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Alex, did you see this, man? Well, of course you did, because you actually stated in our quick hit headliners. Man, this kid looks pretty good. I actually looked at his highlight tape before we took the air today. 6'5", 200-pound wide receiver Lawrence Cager of Calvert Hall High School in Maryland. He has a ton of offers. He has close to 40 scholarship offers from around the nation. The kid looks good, man.
Yeah, 6'5", wide receiver. Those don't come along very often.
No.
And I was watching his highlight tape. This guy's doing toe grabs off the sideline.
Yeah, he looks good.
He's getting 1 feet into. I mean, he's college ready.
I don't watch
tapes.
You
can plug him in freshman year, and I think he'll be college ready.
Yeah, I usually don't watch highlight tapes, you know, in high school highlight tapes, but I watched his, and man, it looks as though he's got great hands. You know, he looks college ready right now. He's got the build
already.
As
you would say, don't get it twisted, though, because he does have a great quarterback to throw him the ball.
Oh, he does. I don't know anything about his quarterback.
The quarterback was throwing him bombs down the field, great arm.
You know anything about him? Is he being recruited?
He has some offers.
Yeah. Ah, interesting. Well, I'll tell you what, man. He looks good. 6'5", 200 pounds. But again, you know, he has close to 40 scholarship offers. I mean, hey, you know, Michigan State is just a small sample size of those offers. So interesting stuff there. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. You guys know him. He's a friend of the show. You know, he's been on countless times to bring us the latest and greatest from the Lansing Lugnuts. The Lugnuts, unfortunately, closed out the season earlier this month. They did not make postseason play. Jesse Goldberg-Strassler is here to put a bow on the season and also to talk a little high school football and even give us a prediction on the MSU and Oregon game. Do we have him right now, Alex? No, I think we lost. Well, we'll get him on in a sec. You know how the technology, folks. But Jesse's going to join us in just a sec, I guess, to wrap up the season for the Lansing Lugnuts. But again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, again, we are taking your calls on MSU and Oregon. What do you think is going to happen out in Eugene as the Spartans take on the Ducks? Out at Autzen Stadium. It's going to be a hot, muggy battle. It's going to be a fun game, folks. Again, we'll take your thoughts and predictions on that. And, of course, if you want to weigh in on the NFL action or any other college football action that will be taking place, again, 517-355-9527. All right, I believe we do have Jesse back right now. Jesse, how you doing, my man?
Doing well. Thank you, Al.
Thanks a lot for joining me today, my friend. So, first off, as I just alluded to, of course, the season, you know, not ending how many Lugnuts fans out there wanted it to. Of course, the franchise, it kind of a roller coaster type of a year. But just to get your collective thoughts on the Luggies not making the postseason, and what did the players and, of course, manager John Tamargo, I mean, what did they kind of feel? What was the overall feeling when you talked to them to wrap up the year?
I think we'll come away from 2014 with, yes, a feeling of disappointment. But that said, at the same time that the Lansing Lugnuts were finishing off their season, the Toronto Blue Jays called up Dalton Pompey, Daniel Norris, and Kendall Graveman to the Major League. And that was huge for these players and for the coaching staff. Pompey and Norris were 2013 Lugnuts. Graveman was a 2013 Lugnut and a 2014 Lug. He spent the entire month of April with us. For these guys, who all they want to do is make it to the major leagues, get to the show, to see that it's not all that far away, man, that puts a little bit more spring in everyone's step heading into the off season.
So, Jesse, I mean, because I always say in minor league baseball, you know, the reward goes far beyond just what happens in the win column. I mean, when you talk about these guys who have a chance now to play in the majors and, you know, make a, you know, go to the big leagues, I mean, is that more of a reward than what the Luggies do, you know, when it comes to postseason hopes?
Yeah. I think given the choice between making it to the majors and winning a championship for that team in that league, I think they would rather get to the major league somehow, some way.
Right.
Nobody wants to lose. Everybody wants to win, especially each game, especially no matter whatever team that you're with. So it holds huge incentive. But they are in the minors in order to make the majors. That is the biggest key. And so seeing that at the end of their journey, that's the most important thing, developing these guys so that down the road, and maybe sooner rather than later, they can play for the Blue Jays or for a different major league squad.
So, Jesse, I mean, how exactly do you measure a minor league baseball manager's success? Is it, you know, well, how do you do that?
Well, let's take two different players. For one, let's take a player who's a first-round draft pick who is given major money as long as that player continues to grow, as long as the major league team can look down and say, all right, he's progressing as we'd like, this is good. Let's take another player. This player was not a first-round pick. Maybe they were a free agent. Maybe they were drafted in the 34th round. If that guy's contributing, that guy's a part of the team, and suddenly you're getting something from him. Kevin Pillar made the majors, and he was a $1,000 sign, and yet he arrived in Lansing, and he was the Midwest League MVP. So if the players are growing, if the players are contributing, and if you can use them somehow, whether up in the major leagues, they can help out your minor leagues, or you can trade them, that's the evaluating. Think of a teacher in school. You've got the students who are going to excel no matter what because they're so driven and their parents are on them and they come from such a positive background.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got other students who might not finish with A's, and yet working with the teacher, getting motivated, they're going to do so much better than they ever would have done before. Manager is simply a teacher.
Right. That is very true. That's a very good way to equate it and put it. You know, I definitely agree with that, Jesse. All right. Well, you know, dive into more into the season now. I want to talk about some stars and surprises from the Lansing Lugnuts that you evaluated throughout the year. I saw that Mitch Ney has been named. Well, he was named as the starting third baseman on the Midwest League postseason all-star team. Of course, Ney, he played in a team high 120 games in his first season, batting .285, led the Lugnuts with the, you know, 135 hits, 57 runs scored. I mean, he was certainly a stud and a star. What were some other stars and surprises from the Luggies this year?
Kendall Graveman was the star of April. Mitch Ney was, I would say, the star of June and July with the way that he turned things around after the All-Star break. And I'll give you two more names in particular. Derek Loveless jumped up to the Lugnuts after having some so-so, or maybe even worse than that, first couple of his professional seasons. He broke out this year. He showed power, he showed speed, he showed the ability to get on base by drawing walks, he was an asset defensively. Nobody expected this from Derek Loveless, and somehow he's gone from being a late mid-round draft pick, high schooler out of Iowa, into a guaranteed prospect. Entering next year, a lot of eyes will be on him to see how well he can perform, but he made it this year. And Brady Dragmire, who was a high school shortstop, and he was drafted and signed, And the Toronto Blue Jays said, try pitching for us. And he's been a starter, and he's been a middle reliever. Toward the end of the year, the Lugnuts tried him out as the closer. And he was throwing a power sinker, 93-94, wherever he wanted. In the offseason, he's going to try to master a slider and master a changeup. And if he gets those down, he is going to be lights out, and he's going to skyrocket his way to the major leagues, too.
Oh, certainly, yeah. Certainly a plethora of individuals who really stood out for this year's team. Okay, so Jesse, looking forward now, of course, I know the season just ended, but where do you go from here if you're John Tamargo, and how do you get better for next season?
Well, the Instructional League is going on right now, and it will go on for a number of weeks. The Instructional League is for when the Blue Jays wanted to devote specific time with specific players, whether it's a Dragmire. You want to make sure, all right, that fastball is good enough. We want to make sure your breaking stuff is good. Whether it's a Justin Atkinson, who showed off a good bat this past year, and now they want to try him behind the plate and work with him as a catcher. So JT's season is not yet over.
Wow.
But he, like the other coaches in the Toronto Blue Jays system, maybe they'll get offers from other organizations, but they are trying to work their way up to the major leagues too. So maybe he gets offered to return to Lansing as a manager. Maybe he gets offered to move up the ladder as a manager. These guys are all trying to climb their way upward.
Oh, boy, it's all about the next challenge, I tell you. Again, Jesse Goldberg, Strassler, play-by-play man for the Lansing Lugnuts. Okay, let's shift gears really quickly, Jesse, because, you know, not only is it, you know, one of my favorite times of the year because the NFL is starting now, of course, and college football is at the realm, but also high school football is one of my favorite events to cover throughout throughout Mid-Michigan coverage here in Lansing. And, you know, it's a fun time. And, you know, you're always out at the games, you know, each and every Friday night for Big Country 92.1. You know, previewing a game and doing play-by-play along with Eric Doc Love of 92.1. And I want to ask you, what is your favorite part about high school football, Jesse?
Favorite part is the atmosphere. When you show up and the school is there, everybody is there supporting their team and having a terrific time, that's the fun of it. It's another way to bring people together, especially Friday night. So you've had the long school week, maybe classes have exhausted you, maybe homework has exhausted you. It's a way to get everyone together, having a terrific time, enjoying themselves before you head off into the weekend. So I enjoy the camaraderie of it all.
Definitely. And, you know, working with Eric, Doc Love, I mean, describe your guys' chemistry. You guys work very well on the air.
Oh, he works his heart off. He works as hard as anybody that I've met. He makes sure to get everything done. He interviews the coaches. He speaks with the athletic director. The interviews that he does, the research that he does, setting up all of the equipment, making sure that everything goes out, making sure that the schedule is done. My gosh, I owe so much to him. And then when we get out on the air, it is a blast. Wherever we'll be calling a game from, whatever high school, whether it's Ford Field, whether it's Breslin Center, he enjoys himself so much. And we get to see such wonderful competition, the finishes, the talent that is on display. It's so much fun. And at his side, I can't help but crack a smile.
Oh, without a doubt. And for those who don't know, I actually filled in for the man, the myth, the legend, Jesse, last week. Of course, you were still doing Lug Nuts last week, Jesse. So I came in. And like you said, I mean, Doc, I mean, he does so much to going out and getting the interview, setting up everything on his own. I mean, he's something else, I tell you.
You filled in admirably, though. You set the bar, so it's going to be tough for me. Maybe I'll reach that bar in a couple of weeks.
Oh, no. I'm still reaching for your bar, Jesse. Okay, stop it, my brother. Well, I tell you what, and you know, I was talking to Eric on the Hills. Of course, we went out to the St. John's and East Lansing football game and broadcasted that. You know, and Doc was telling me that you guys are actually expanding the high school football coverage and actually trying out, you know, and going out to different schools that you haven't gone to in the past. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. For example, East Lansing. It was the first game that we've ever called involving the East Lansing Trojans. And this week, we have Owosso and Portland, which is going to be a fun matchup. The Raiders so powerful. Lansing Catholic is coming up next week. We've got Fulton and Fowler on our radar, Hazlitt and DeWitt, Lanesburg and PW, the big PW Pirates matchup.
Yeah.
And we'll go out on October 24th, before the playoffs can get underway, we'll call our first game involving the Holt Rams and the Grand Ledge Comet. That's going to be a blast.
That's going to be a good one, Jesse. Oh, well, I tell you, well, you guys are going to be everywhere this year. I mean, how did the inkling come for you guys to, you know, to expand your area and sort of try new things and go to different schools? I mean, how did that idea come about?
I think they realized how popular it was. And speaking with sponsors, speaking with the folks who tune in, we realized we need to give more teams coverage. That's important. Hearing from the parents or hearing from the players that here we are to call the game, to let everyone know how you're doing. And that was more important than we realized. And so the more schools that we can cover, the more schools we can visit and say, here's what's going on their Friday night. Here are these players. Here are the coaches who really deserve such positive attention. You know, it's a pleasure to be a part of it.
Yeah, certainly, without a doubt. All right, before I let you go, Jesse, give us sort of a preview for the Portland and Owosso game, and what do you know about those two teams?
Well, Owosso only won one game all of last year, and their coach Tom Harkema passed away from cancer much earlier, months back. And so their new coach is Brian Carpenter, and they came out inspired last week. They won 33-22. They took out Corona. Big games for Gavin Barnes, their tailback, and Curtis Ike, their wide receiver. Jalen Weekly is a good one under center. Problem is, when you take on Portland has a powerful rushing attack, and on defense, their corners can shut you down.
Yeah.
They've got terrific defensive backs. Two interceptions past week. Nick Herblitt's good. Corey Gensterblum is stepping up, and you cannot let them pressure your passer. It's going to be tough for Owosso. Portland, there's a reason that the Raiders won the state title 2 years ago.
Yeah, that is certainly true. Well, it's going to be an exciting one. I can't wait to, you know, get out. Alex and I, of course, will be out covering a lot of high school football tonight. Well, I tell you what, I can't wait to see you on the sidelines, Jesse.
Al, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, you take care, my friend. Again, Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play man for the Lansing Lugnuts and, of course, for Big Country 92.1 as they will be doing and be at a lot of high school football games this year, him and his partner, Eric Doc Love. You can catch them each and every Friday night on 92.1. All right, folks. Well, let's hit our second break. When we come back, still got to talk some NFL. That's right. We'll recap the Seahawks and Packers from last night, give you our NFL pick'ems, and also give you a recap of what we discussed on the brink of yesterday's show, I should say, giving you a recap of our NFL season predictions. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
One, two, three, make it fun. Make it fun. I got to make it fun.
Welcome back to Current Sports on this, you heard it from James, Funky Friday. Yeah, that's right, it's Funky Friday where we play some funk music each and every Friday. Thanks a lot, Alex, for bringing that to us. Really briefly, Alex, of course, we have to talk about this before we move on. U of M and Notre Dame, they will end their historic rivalry, a rivalry that certainly has a lot of history to it. You know, everybody gets up to watch U of M and Notre Dame go at it. And even with MSU the same way when they play Notre Dame. But, you know, it's it. You know, this is going to be it. This is going to be the final game in this rivalry. I tell you what, I'm going to be, I guess I'm going to be channel flipping back and forth because I tell you what, it is when you look at these two teams that have, you know, have a lot of history together. It's sad to see it go. You know, it's certainly sad to see it go. And, you know, it's a rivalry that definitely is really true to the form. I mean, when you talk about Michigan and Notre Dame, people who I know a lot of people who attend Michigan and talk about, you know, some games from back in the day when they had these historic battles with each other. You know, it's just kind of the politics of college football. You know, things happen, you know, and you know, money talks. And that's sort of the reason why this move is being made. But I tell you what, being a college football fan, I personally am going to miss it.
Yeah. I just want to get your thoughts more about it. Now, what other, I mean, we're going to talk about Tigers, obviously, a little bit later in the show. But for right now, what else are you looking out for?
In that game?
Yeah.
Well, just to see if Michigan, you know, can if they do beat Notre Dame, and you know, it'll be two straight now. They start off the season pretty well. They look pretty good last week. But again, that's against Appalachian State. I mean, how much can you tell from that game? So playing a team like Notre Dame, who looked pretty solid this year as well, if Michigan does this, they're on the primetime stage. This can sort of jumpstart their season and really heighten their expectations. Again, I'm going to be looking at that offensive line. You know, one of the biggest Achilles heels for this Michigan football team last year. They looked very, very well. That offensive line looked pretty beefed up against Appalachian State. They were getting a lot of push from guys. I mean, these guys were getting, you know, pushing that defensive line of Appalachian State like 10 to 20 yards down the field, it seemed like. My goodness, maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, but you get the message. But Michigan looked very, very well to start their year. But can they do it now against a team like Notre Dame is what I'm looking at. It'll be a good start to the season if they can get this win.
Right. It's just so important that they turn it up right now. And that's where all the woes came last season is they started off fine, and then there were a string of games where they were just not hitting any cylinder. And some people were blaming on the line. Some were blaming on Devin Gardner. But you have the pieces in place now. You have the line that's been there for a year. A lot of the guys coming back. You have your quarterback coming back. You have your defensive coordinator now with the established system back. There's really no more excuses for Michigan at this point. And it's more of a statement game, I would say, for that coaching staff than anything.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Brady Hoke is on the hot seat here. I mean, if you look at the numbers, I mean, it's been 17 years. Can you believe it? It's been 17 years since Michigan won a national championship. And it's been 10 years. Get this. 10 years since Michigan won a Big Ten championship. Can you believe that? I mean, you're talking about Michigan here. This is Michigan, for goodness sake. So going against a team like Notre Dame, this is the final time these two will be meeting. I mean, hey, this is also a statement game. Just like for MSU, even though Michigan State will be a bigger statement going against a team like Oregon. But, you know, for Michigan going against a team like Notre Dame, where you have this historic rivalry, if they get the win and do it convincingly, for goodness sake, it'll be big and a great start for them to start the year off to a good positive note. And Brady Hoke, all eyes will be on him as well this weekend as well. So, all right, moving on now. Of course, the Tigers, really briefly with 10 minutes left in the show, the Tigers, I tell you what, they got a much-needed win. Well, what win isn't much-needed for the Tigers now as the season dwindles down? But the Tigers got a big win against the Cleveland Indians to take that series 3-1. They started off pretty hot, but then it took them 9 innings later to finish to a strong finish and get the win over the Cleveland Indians. Because I tell you what, they started off so well. I mean, it was a 4-0 game I was looking at. And all of a sudden, you know, I turn on the Seahawks and Packers game. I'm like, all right, the Tigers look good. You know, they were my second pick for that day on the pick'ems. And I start panicking because I'm looking at the score, and, you know, Cleveland had come all the way back in the late innings. I don't know what happened to Max Scherzer, but, you know, things kind of went awry. And all of a sudden, you have a 4-4 tie game. The game goes to extras. And then all of a sudden, in the 11th inning, the bats wake up for the Tigers, and they get a clutch win. Much needed. They started hot, went cold, and then woke up again. Typical Tigers.
And, I mean, the relief, we've harped on it, but Albuquerque laying up the runs, aside from him, the relief was solid in extra innings again, Al. That was a really good sign. Aside from Scherzer and Albuquerque's one run, that the relief really kept them in the game in the late innings. That really kept them into the 11th.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I just think, you know, for the Tigers, I mean, you just never know what's going to happen in a game with them. And they can start out hot, but then with that pitching, you never know what's going to happen. And for me, another thing for me with the Tigers is just the defense. And I harped on it during the midway. I remember when I sat down with Peter Wharf, our station manager here at WKR, and we sort of gave we gave the Tigers our midseason grades. And one of the grades we gave was the Tigers defense. I think I gave the Tigers defense like a C plus or a C minus or a D or something like that. Because the defense, you know, it remains an issue for the Tigers. I mean, if you look at yesterday in the unearned runs, you know, the unearned run the Tigers allowed in the fourth was the 20th they have allowed since the start of August. That tied them with the Chicago White Sox for the most unearned runs allowed in that time by an AL team. You know, I just don't get it sometimes. Maybe that comes down to lack of focus, or I don't know. But the defense for the Tigers is ranked and was ranked at that midway point of the season, was ranked near the bottom of the league, and it continues to be right. A hindrance and a problem, something we don't talk about a lot here when we talk about the Tigers.
Al, that's when you get – you're playing guys like Hernan Perez and Steven Moya, guys that have never played in the major leagues before, and even Castellanos is a rookie, and you have Eugenio Suarez next to him. A lot of the errors are coming from these new players. And yeah, that's just a problem with the depth that they have, with all the injuries and Iglesias going down. And and if you saw Torii Hunter getting hit in the foot, that was a big scare last game. That looked like a pretty big, pretty hard ball that hit his foot. Looks like he'll be okay. I don't think it's too severe, but that's the thing, is you're playing all these young guys for the first time. You're starting all these pitchers. You got all these young infielders. You're going to get that.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, I tell you what, if the defense doesn't tighten up, that could be an alarming problem as the season goes on for the Tigers into the postseason now. As far as Max Scherzer, in his six innings, he threw 124 pitches. Now, according to BaseballReference.com, the only time he threw more pitches in a start in his career came when he made 127 pitches in seven innings in a win over the Indians in 2011. So Scherzer was certainly exhausted, I guess.
Something
you could
about
say.
Those Indians. He loves pitching long.
Yeah, I tell you what, he pitched very, very long last night. And a lot of it has to do, I mean, because, you know, they were able to find some creases as the game went on, and we really, you know, led to that demise of that lead and end up tying it. So I was in panic mode. I tell you, my streak was on the line, yeah. Brother.
Now, in regards to Kansas City, it's still amazing to me that they're still a game back. I mean, it's 0.5 back. They won the two over the weekend and two over the week, and they're still a game behind. So Kansas City gained a half game on them with just that loss, that one loss in the series.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, hey, it's desperation mode, man. You know, Kansas City right now, I mean, they're fighting for their lives just as much as the Tigers right now. So, and if you look at it, you know, it's getting to the thick of things. You know, it's really, if you look at it, you know, Detroit, which holds, again, the American League second wild card spot, they won three of four in this series now to pull one game. Like you said, Alex, behind the Kansas City Royals in the AL Central. So, hey, it's getting down to the nitty-gritty, and every game is a big one. Again, folks, 5 minutes left, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's talk some NFL to wrap up the show and give you our NFL pick-ems. I was very, 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 very impressed with the Seattle Seahawks last night. My goodness. I mean, they look like they have not even missed a beat. Hey, shout-out to Marshawn Lynch for the fantasy points. He went bonkers yesterday, but I love the Seahawks, man. Even though, looking at the stats, did you know in the past 8 years, the defending Super Bowl champion has not gotten back to the Super Bowl, let alone even won a playoff game? I think that streak will be broken with Seattle. I think they'll make the playoffs. They'll win a playoff game, I think. I don't think they're getting to the Super Bowl just because that stat is so alarming, but the Seahawks do look like they haven't missed a set from last year. I tell you, it was impressive watching that game last night, and that Seattle Seahawks defense definitely gave the Packers a lot of trouble, even though there was a rookie center, you know, hiking a ball for the first time ever to Aaron Rodgers, which they caused a problem. It was almost a disastrous second quarter where it's actually a fumble where Aaron Rodgers actually turned the sidelines and tried to get a timeout. Thank goodness the Packers were able to corral the ball. But still, I mean, looking at this offense, you got Russell Wilson, who's so dynamic. He can burn you through the air on the run. Marshawn Lynch, spectacular. He is a man, one of the best running backs in the league. And then you got a guy who you can really, you know, you got this chess piece that you can put anywhere on the field offensively, and Percy Harvin. I mean, how many times Percy Harvin can be a running back, he can be a receiver, he can block for you. I mean, this guy is so dynamic. He's unbelievable. He was unbelievable last night.
Were you surprised how good he was even after all his feats at Minnesota with the injuries?
No, not at all. I mean, because I've seen Percy Harvin even when he was at Minnesota. I mean, we saw some shine at how athletic he was. it really stood out to me at just how athletic he was and how versatile he was. And how they lose him last year. Seattle used Percy Harvin. They milked him dry last year. He hasn't missed a beat, man. But what really surprises me is just how many areas you can put him on the field. So, very impressive win from Seattle. Let's run down some picks here really quickly. Our NFL pick-ems here, Alex. First game, 49ers and my Cowboys, who I'm rocking their hat right now.
Do you think Terrence Williams, will he play?
I don't know. That's going to be a good question. I think he will play, though. I think Terrence will be healthy by the start of kickoff. I'm going with the Cowboys in this one.
I'm
going
to go against your boys and go for the Niners.
You're going with the Niners. You're so high. You got the Niners making the playoffs this year.
Hey, CK, man.
Oh, man. I'm not a big Colin Kaepernick fan. All right. I'm going with the Cowboys, though. Saints and Falcons. I'm going with the Saints in this one.
I'll go with the Saints as well. And Falcons, you still got to see what's up with that defense.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think, to be honest with you, I don't think the Falcons are going to be that good this year. I think it's going to be another down year.
I think Julio Jones and Ryan will really hold them together. Yeah. Other than that, their defense has so many questions.
I think Steven Jackson will also have a good year. Matt Ryan, I don't know. I'm not sold on the Falcons, though. I'm going with the Saints in that game. Heck, I got the Saints winning the Super Bowl this year, for goodness sake. But all right, Vikings and Rams, who you got?
That's close. I mean, this Rams team, this is a way different team than it was years ago, even without Michael Sam making it. I'm going to go with the Vikes in this one. I still think
I was about to say, because Sam Bradford, man, got injured. He was having a great preseason, and all of a sudden he blows out his knee.
Exactly. They're going to be working their QBs. Minnesota, probably one of the worst teams in that division in the NFC, but I think they'll prove the Rams wrong in this
game. I'm going with the Vikes as well in that one. All right, Browns and Steelers.
You think Roethlisberger will be back in full form? I'm going to go with the Steelers.
I am going, boy. Give me the Steelers as well. I'm going to go with the Steelers as well in that one. Jaguars, Eagles.
I'm going to go with the Eagles.
Give me the Eagles in that one as well. Have we diversed on a pick yet?
Have we deferred the Cowboys the Cowboys and Niners.
Okay. Raiders and Jets.
I'm going to go with the Jets.
Give me the Jets as well. The Raiders, I'm not sold on them as well. Bengals and Ravens. I think this is going to be a good game.
Very good game. You got Andy Dalton, Flacco. You've got some new additions on each squad.
Ravens are
home. I think Bernard is going to show a lot on the ground game. I like the Bengals in this one, Alex.
I'm going with the Bengals as well. Bills and Bears.
I like the Bills.
Give me the Bears in
what?
That one. Give me the Bears in that
you
one.
Like you like Martellus Bennett, the tight end?
I just think the Bears, they got a lot to prove this year as well, too, man. I think they're gonna surprise a lot of people.
Cutler's been ridden already.
Yeah, Cutler, he's had an up and down year. Yeah, last season was not a great season for him.
He had no help. They did acquire a lot of guys, though, on the offense to help him out.
They're at home, though. I think they will salvage that momentum. Right. Give me the Bears to start off the season the right way. Redskins and Houston Texans. Give me the Houston Texans, baby.
I like the Skins, man. RG3, baby.
Oh, gosh. I'm not sold on him either. Him and Colin Kaepernick. All right. Titans and Chiefs. I'm going with Kansas City.
I'm going to go with the Chiefs as well.
Patriots and Dolphins. Give me the great Tom Brady to win over Ryan Tannehill.
Ditto.
Okay, and Panthers and Buccaneers. I'm going with give me Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay. I like Tampa Bay this year. They're at home in this one, right?
Tampa Bay is home.
That's a big one. I like the Panthers this year. I'm going to go with you with the Bucs in the first game, though.
You're going with the Bucs. Okay, yep. And the Bucs are going to surprise a lot of people. They're going to make the playoffs this year. Colts and Broncos to wrap up Sunday.
Very good game. Luck against the guy who left the Colts himself. I'm going to go with Peyton Manning.
That's
the Broncos.
A great primetime game on NBC. Give me Peyton Manning. But, hey, Andrew Luck. Those are two fantasy quarterbacks for both leagues. That I have in that game. It's going to be a good game. All right, folks. Well, we are out of time, but hey, thanks a lot.
Lions Giants. What about Lions Giants?
We'll get to that on Monday. That's okay. Monday night, baby. Monday night. That's all the Sunday games, though. We'll talk about Monday when it gets here. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. Thanks a lot to Jesse Goldberg Strassler for joining me today. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and hey, have a good weekend, people, and be easy.